Hello, I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast, Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, man. I think I've got a mild cold.
A mild cold?
Yeah, I say I think because it's really confusing because I've not had one for like 2 years. And obviously, I just don't really know what to do.
Isn't it a relief?
Taking the whole week off.
Isn't it a relief to have a cold or a cough that's not... It's not the bug.
It's I need to test again, but I don't know. It's very strange. I was just like, what is this? What is this? Like, the sniffles?
Did I ever have the test? And I was just like, are you drilling for oil up there? I was just like,
Man. Well, that makes me wonder when I do like, you know, self-tests and stuff, whether I'm doing it right. Because every time I go and have a test by someone who's testing, you know, they really get up in that nose.
The test for me is always if my eyes water. If my eyes water, then that I know that's the right one. If I feel like I'm on a journey of self-discovery, then it's the right amount.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, that's why I started doing more rigorous testing when I had to do my own ones. You know, I was just like, if I'm not feeling as stressed as the last 5 minutes in an Atletico Madrid game, then I've not done this properly.
Yes. Lateral flow Madrid. Oh, goodness.
Which is
such a stressful team.
What our main topic will be today. But anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very well. I am in the UK, obviously, I think I might have mentioned I'm in the UK briefly this week. And it's just nice being back, seeing friends, seeing family, and just being in the same country as a lot of people who I very much care about. That's always nice. Otherwise...
And not in the same country as me, which I imagine...
Let's not get into that.
Kind of proves the previous sentence.
It does very much.
Even when I try and get rid of him. I still have to talk to it twice a week.
Got some of my mum's cooking as well, which is a joy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That poor dinner last night, I saw it. I was like, this is not long for this world. That thing didn't last long. So, yeah.
Oh, man. I'm ready to make a big soup this week. Shout out to Sean New, formerly of the Ringer Parish.
Yes.
I love, you know, big on the hashtag soup season online. And he inspired me.
I do follow some great foodies, actually. I've got to say, there's a woman I follow called Saratu, and Saratu basically has this like hashtag Saratu Eats, Saratu Eats, and just posts these incredible like meals and recipes. I don't cook any of it, I'm just watching it, but I mean, she cooks some great stuff. So, yeah, check it out. Check it out. Tweet us, all you have on the on the Twitter.
Can't wait for our new podcast called Foodio.
Indeed.
It's going to be great.
Don't even, you know, don't joke. That's the thing. Anyway.
There was a shouts to Abba Sasari who wrote that amazing thing for the Stadio site about the Bass Derby and the food of the Bass Derby.
Right.
There's definitely something we have to do in the future about games and food.
Yeah, I see
or
that.
Or football and food, for sure. But anyway, on to today's show. And we hope everyone's staying safe and well, getting vaccinated if you can, getting that booster if you can. TheRinger.com/soccer. Make sure you check that for any football pieces, also just theringer.com in general. I've been listening to, well, so I what I did this in the last week or so, I binged watched Succession, typical Rye style, waited till the season was done, watched it afterwards, all in one go. I've been going back and checking episodes of The Watch with Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald because they did like episode by episode things on Succession and Prestige TV as well on The Ringer. It's been really cool because I'm really impatient with stuff that's released week by week. So I quite like waiting until it's all done and then just watch the whole thing.
I'm like that. The binging is definitely the way.
So I'm glad I did that. I finished Succession on Saturday. Oh man, it's so good.
Well put together TV is something, because I've been thinking about this a lot, like, you know, this is a conversation for another time, not for the podcast, but great. I wonder so much like if great TV has replaced like great novels in the public consciousness. But in terms of the character development and the way they're discussed and the range, because my obsession has always been, how can you reach the biggest possible audience with character development? And TV just does that so, so well.
Well, just the bar's been raised, hasn't it, over the last decade or so, specifically. I think what is now considered the norm is, it's no disrespect to anything that came before it, but I think you're allowed to have a deeper level of storytelling, I think, across. And
it was HBO that started
Sopranos and Wire like changed that, I think, in terms of writing.
They were the people that basically decided, the moment HBO decided, specifically them, they decided, hang on a minute, why can't people watch feature film quality every single week? The moment that was decided, it was game over. It was just, it changed everything.
Mm. Righty's House this week will be Jeanette Amiowa, and they're going to talk AFCON, they're going to talk WSL, and they're going to talk a little bit about Arsenal, because Righty was there on the weekend.
Mm.
So we're going to swerve that stuff for today. I think that it'll be more of a generic AFCON conversation, because you'll have a Ghanaian representative and a Nigerian representative, and the past week has seen, I kind of suggested maybe they should talk about just the state of the Righty's House WhatsApp group.
Can I just say, as someone of Ugandan heritage with absolutely no skin in the game, it has been extremely interesting to see, how can I say this, a premature counting of chickens?
You are basically, if there was going to be a kind of an AFCON updated version of the Sickos.
Yes, yes.
It'll just be Musa watching AFCON as a Ugandan through the window. Yes.
It's incredible. Yes, yes, yes.
Chaos, and none of it affects me.
None of it at all. Delightful.
So yeah, that will go up on Wednesday, and Stadio will be back on Thursday. All right, so today we're going to start in La Liga, then we will talk about the Premier League relegation scrap and title race, which seemed to, I don't know, the discourse seemed to open it up this week, although not a huge amount has changed. But maybe we'll touch on a little bit of Serie A as well.
Absolutely.
But mainly Tammy.
Yeah.
And we'll give a quick shout to the Bundesliga.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
All right, man. Let's go to Madrid, because Wandemonium.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
A specific type of chaos and drama that happens at the Wanda, where things become a little bit more complex than they probably should be in theory, and then everyone leaves, whether you win, lose, or draw, completely exhausted. Media, players, fans, coaching staff, everyone. Atletico Madrid 3, Valencia 2. In a fixture that I think has been, I wouldn't say overlooked, but maybe underappreciated in the level of spikiness that it quite often delivers. It kind of had the full narrative arc. Valencia going 2-0 up, and, you know, Atleti suffering, looking like it was set to continue. Their poor run of form, their run of form has been, let's say, patchy at best.
It's been catfish is what it's been. Really?
Has it though?
It has been.
Should we not have known by now though?
We should have. And also, I can't, it's hard to remember. Actually, no, that's not true because I support Manchester United. Such an assortment of excellent parts, whether fit is ill. If someone had said to you, for example, I saw the great Kevin Williams on Twitter talking about Atleti's defence being porous. And I thought to myself, that's a sentence. If someone had said to you 4 years ago, oh yeah, Atleti will have a porous defence and Oblak would be stressed under pressure from all his shots. And I'd be like, no, that's just not a thing. That's not, I'd have laughed at a suggestion like that. But there you go, Atleti being entertaining in all the ways that a team is not trying to be entertaining, but still pulling out the victory. I mean, incredible.
It was the final few minutes where things really kind of got dramatic because Yunus Musa put Valencia ahead with a really lovely goal, actually.
Beautiful low drive. He's still only a teenager, right?
Yes, yeah, 19 wow. years old. Yeah, yeah. And
great player.
He is a great player. He's got big things ahead of him, I think. And Hugo Duro got the second one just before half time. And Atleti kind of... they kind of looked done, if I'm being honest. I thought, all right, this is it. This is going to be more discourse about Simeone. Champions League is going to be a real struggle for them now.
Yeah.
Especially because Betis had won on Friday night as well to kind of cement that gap.
Great win for them over Espanyol, right?
Yeah. Mateus Cunha came on, scored a tap-in to get Atleti back into the game. There was 25 minutes left on the clock. 26. And then two goals in stoppage time, kind of quite, not quite as close together as Spurs' winners, well, equaliser and winner against Leicester last week, but not far off. Angel Correa getting the equaliser in the 91st minute. And then Mario Hermoso surprisingly popping up at the back post for a tap-in. Poacher's finish in the third minute of stoppage time at the end of the game to win it for Atleti. I mean, the only football tweet I wrote this weekend was that, you know, Pepe Bordalas has probably re-aged again after this game because he's someone who, as we have mentioned many, many times before, has, I say aged rather...
Yeah, remarkably. Yeah.
remarkably well. And yeah. I think, you know, there's been actually quite a lot of talk about Pepe Bordalas in terms of, you know, he kind of really slimmed down, went on a really good diet like 10 years ago, lost a load of weight. And then, you know, I think, you know, just had some stuff.
Do you think you those...
know, a little bit of beard dye, I think. I'm not sure. I don't think we have to consult implants. Legal on that.
Yeah, you know? not implants, but just a bit of dye.
No, fun. Yeah, a bit of, you know, just kind of looking after himself a little bit more. And it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd come out for that post-match interview grey, fully grey, you know, kind of like, actually on a succession tip, like when Jeremy Sprong actually turns up for press interviews and he's got grey hair. That was kind of what I imagined.
He goes grey because of the stress of like just being that guy's son.
No, he dyes his hair for succession and then he's actually grey in real life. So I kind of imagined like Bordalas to come out for the post-match interview, just grey beard, kind of grey everything. Because it was complete, like I remember watching the game when the equaliser went in and seeing Simeone kind of, I don't even know how to explain it. He was so frantic on the touchline.
Mm.
I sat there thinking when Correa scored, just being like, this is exhausting. Like this as someone who isn't an Atleti fan, who isn't a Valencia fan, complete neutral, not from the country, watching as an appreciator of the league, I found it exhausting. I find that watching Atleti exhausting. And I know we've made many jokes about the suffering is necessary, but I kind of sat there when the equalizer went in and I was like, is it though? Is it actually? Because I was looking at Simeone and he looked like, do you know what he looked like? He looked like someone trying to direct a mass evacuation in like Cloverfield or something like that.
Like an Emmerich movie, like 2012.
Like that. Or like, you know, where there's a big super monster on the loose. Like he can see it behind everyone. Everyone's running towards him and he's trying to kind of like figure out what to do. And I looked at him being like, the energy and the emotional strain that you must exert for each game.
Yeah, because
how
every game
sustainable
is different.
Is that?
Well, I think you've mentioned a great point there, because it's exactly like that, a mass evacuation only. It's a mass evacuation every single week, and every single week the threat is different and the exits are different. Like, and this is the problem. It's a I was thinking about you know, Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea right now, and Thomas Tuchel is basically like, he's still rotating his front three. And at this point, it'd be a miracle if like he settles on a front three. The thing, the difference between Tuchel.
Ooh, I want to talk about that though, because I was thinking about something.
The difference between Tuchel and Simeone is they're both frantic. But with Tuchel, there seems to be an end goal, right? You can see what it is evolving towards. I look at Simeone's Atleti and I still can't work out what the ultimate plan is. Is it going to end up as a 4-4-2? Will it end up as a 4-3-3? You know, is it going to be a 3-5-2? I don't know if he knows, because we know that he likes a structure. Cunha's come in, and that is a hell of a glow up for him. I know that Atleti are struggling, but they're still like, they could end up fourth. And Joao Felix started, but it's not about him starting. It's the fit, Ryan. It's the fit. Mm. It's not so much like whether he starts or not. Or, you know, the other day I was watching the Wolves Brentford and I saw them talk about Adama Traore's goal return. And I thought, oh, that's really low for a player of his quality. And it got me thinking about Joao Felix and going, like, his goal return at this point of his career should be a hell of a lot higher than it is. This is someone who is blessed as a finisher, is extraordinary, and should be topping goal scoring charts, in my opinion, in a different team.
Yes and no. I remember writing that piece for The Ring about a year ago about Joao Felix and how that kind of added bite was opening up a really interesting potential development as a player at Atleti. And he got COVID and he had a load of injuries, and it kind of just, his form just fell off a cliff, much like Atleti's actually. And there's definitely, I think if you look at the last year of Joao Felix, I think it would definitely be fair to say that there hasn't been the level of progress that we saw maybe in the 6 months prior to that, going into the back end of 2020, for sure. And I wonder whether that's coincided with, well, I think we said it either last week or the week before, about how they're really stacked, Atleti. Touching on that disaster movie theme, it's like trying to escape somewhere in a fucking Lamborghini and like the roads are falling away in front of your very eyes. Yeah, you're in an absolutely sick car, but you actually need a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
this is my problem with it. No, and I love that you draw that analogy, but I think what spoiled me is Pep. The knowledge that there is a manager out there who is primed to get the very best out of Joao Felix's attacking talents. The knowledge that that manager exists out there in football, and then seeing him at Atleti, it's like, these are prime years for you. Like, these are prime years, and I'm just not seeing, it's not just that he hasn't kicked on, it's just that what he does is not being maximised. I'm a bit concerned about that, to be honest.
I mean, I'm concerned as well, because it feels like at the moment that Atleti game by game are putting out fires, and that's no way to really develop a team.
No.
Especially a team that won the league last season and arguably has the best squad in La Liga.
Right.
Atleti are underusing and underutilizing the people at their disposal. Now, I wonder whether that might just be the fact that every game is so exhausting and everything does feel a little bit too chaotic for Atleti. Like, I think the main thing I would say, the difference between this Atleti and the Atleti of maybe like 6-7 years ago, maybe the one that won the league before last season.
Right.
The last time before last season, sorry.
2014.
The chaos was controlled and they were the people who controlled it.
Yeah.
The chaos now feels outside of their control, and I'm not sure that they know how to deal with it when it arises. Now, we're saying this in the game that they came back from 2-0 down and 1-3-2. It feels a little bit bizarre, but I think this is one of the things about Atleti at the moment. Like, this could have easily just been 2-0 and done.
Yeah.
While there are positives to draw out of the game, this isn't sustainable. This way of playing football is just not sustainable for anyone who is really genuinely looking to either regain the title, which they're not going to do, qualify for the Champions League, which isn't guaranteed. It's a big few months for Simeone. And it's a big few months for Atleti, because we've seen this season that La Liga and the future landscape of La Liga is wide open. Probably more so than it has been since maybe the early 2000s, I'd say. Maybe
when Deportivo were out there doing their thing.
I think it's really there, and Sevilla are a prime example of that. Sevilla are, for the second year running, stepping into the second half of the season, towards the back end of the season. Their title challenge kind of peaked and troughed last season, but That's 2 years in a row that they have been closer to the front runners probably than they have been for a long time. Betis up in third, cemented their place in third at the moment currently, because even if any of the teams behind them win their games in hand, I think Betis will stay third. You know, this is a different looking La Liga than we're used to. And arguably the side or the club that is most set, or the squad, let's say, that is most tooled up to dominate has kind of, without sounding too harsh, has kind of fucked it a little bit.
Absolutely. I was disappointed by how the Champions League campaign ended and how they've gone sideways. And obviously there's the replacement of Luis Suarez, you know, that's going to be a big deal just in terms of what he means in terms of occupying the front line. I think they'll be fine because they've got Correa there, who's very good. Cunha's come in, obviously, Felix, you mentioned before, and Carrasco, you know, they've got goal scorers. But I'm just interested how they manage this sort of next 18 months, really. But yeah, that's how I feel.
We mentioned Sevilla. They actually drew with Celta Vigo 2-2, but they are 4 points behind Real Madrid, who also drew this weekend with Elche.
Good comeback. That Elche gave them two very tough games, actually, in the cup and now, yeah, here as well.
Karim Benzema missed the first penalty of his entire career.
That blew my mind. That stat. Well, no, for Real Madrid, was it his first of his entire career or just for Real?
Yeah, he'd had 19 out of 19 up to that point.
That blew my mind and Real Madrid, when I heard that stat. And then Modric got his first in La Liga. That's not a surprise because there's like 10 penalty takers ahead of Modric.
Mm-hmm. And then Militao with a 92nd minute equaliser, salvaging a point for Real Madrid. We mentioned Betis with a big win over Espanyol on Friday night. And Barcelona managed to scrape past Alaves. In the first half of this game was probably one of...
It was a hard watch.
It was tough, man. Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough watch. Yeah, it was a very tough watch. And but Frankie de Jong, man, like Frankie de Jong getting another crucial goal for Barca. I think there's something, there was a stat about Frankie that highlighted, it was an Opta stat, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it kind of highlighted how crucial Frankie de Jong goals are for Barcelona. And I think that this is the really intriguing thing about Frankie de Jong is the fact that, like, we've said probably since we started Stadio, maybe not long after, but Barcelona really need to give the keys to that midfield to Frankie. As much as Busquets has had a bit of a revival last season, especially for Spain in the Euros.
It was stunning. Yeah.
But. Again, we're talking about long-term development of a club. There's a reason why Frankie de Jong is a flippable asset, you know. It's because he has potential, and he has potential to run midfield. And you've said it before, like how that transfer hasn't really worked, he's still been more low-key crucial for Barca than a lot of people give him credit for. And here was another example of that.
Watching him combine with Messi in the Copa del Rey final was like, it was a really beautiful moment of like, you know, I think, you know, like, you know, that thing, we'll always have Paris. It's like, we'll always have Athletic Club in that Copa final. For him, the way that him and Messi combined, I saw that and thought that's the future.
Mm.
That's the future for Barcelona if they keep that. And that, honestly, he, at his best, even for Barcelona in an unfamiliar sort of tactical setting or an unusual tactical setting, he is spectacular. The sad thing, of course, is, as you say rightly, with Busquets, like Xavi, there's just no real way that Xavi can not start Busquets the way that Busquets has been playing in the setup that he likes. And there's also no way you can keep a player of the quality of De Jong in the shadows for too long. So, of course, you keep him on the field because he gives you more on the field than off. But I don't know, this is a funny one. Barcelona might need to have faith in their own process and be like, look, we'll let him go because we're going to get a midfield configuration which will work for us. We will have midfielders that will do the job. We will find players moving on our ranks that will deliver.
You've got Gavi, Nico and Pedri all there.
This is the thing.
Anything else in the league you want to touch on?
No, that's good, actually. I think we're good. No. We're good. Yeah,
Just very quickly, in the Women's Spanish Super Cup final, Barcelona beat Atleti 7-0, hat-trick for Caroline Graham Hansen. But there was a lovely moment after the game where Barca players circled around Virginia Torrekiller. It was their first appearance for Atleti since having surgery for a brain tumour. So despite having won the game at full time, Barca players all went round her and lifted her up in the air and threw her up in the air. Like, you know how players do with coaches when they win a trophy.
Yeah, the pep thing.
Yeah, it was just a really lovely the moment. Bumps. Just a really, really nice moment. But Barca...
This is revenge as well, because this time, I may beat them last year on penalties.
Mm.
So this was like a real kind of like, this was a payback. And Barcelona, like Graham Hansen in particular, they're going to regret disrespecting Barcelona with all these like Team of the Year awards and like individual awards.
It's an absolute joke.
Because here's the thing, I think those things matter. Weirdly enough, I think that the disrespect by those awards not being given galvanizes the players more than the respect by them being given. You know, the way that Barcelona have been disrespected by, you know, Team of the Year awards, it's just, come on, like Graham Hansen's coming for everyone.
Yeah.
Got a hat trick here. I think a hat trick and three assists, actually, and just ran the show.
Anything else in Spain you want to touch on, or should we just take a break?
No, I think we're good. We're good.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, man, let's go to the Premier League.
Let's do it.
Where would you like to begin?
We could begin at the bottom.
I think we should.
Yeah. So Watford Norwich. Watford 0, Norwich 3. Watford retaining Emmanuel Dennis, who didn't go to AFCON to help power their goal threat. And that did not work out particularly well. The goal threat came from Norwich. Josh Sargent got a couple, including a spectacular opener, a backheel, a sort of floated backheel lob. And it's a brilliant improvised finish, a very kind of Giroud type thing where the ball is coming behind you and you have to adjust. And what I love about this is there was no kind of commentary of, did he mean it? Because you see him clearly watching the ball onto his foot. I think in the last few years in the Premier League, I think that commentators have eventually come round to believing that, wow, you know what, actually, we have so much talent in this league. Maybe all the incredible things happening are deliberate. And we saw this again with, remember Benzema's amazing goal at the Euros against, I think it's Switzerland, when he's running and the ball comes behind him and he brings it into his stride, that incredible backheel. The Josh Sargent goal feels of that quality of touch, really spectacular. And I thought to do that in a game of this importance, because he has struggled for goals, Sargent, to do that, to play with that kind of freedom in a game of this importance, I thought was really striking. Yeah, so great, great win for Norwich.
Yeah, out of the relegation zone. I mean, this is the thing, the tricky thing about the table at the moment is just that it's because of the big discrepancy in games. It's just, it's hard to really call.
But this is the thing though, relegation zone's different. It's points in hand because it's unlike.
You're saying the relegation zone is built different.
It's built different. Listen, it's weird because I have a small theory. If you're chasing the title, you're a good, you're a team with like ample resources and you're like going at it. So you're Chelsea, Liverpool, City chasing the title, those particular teams, and you've got games, you know, you've got games in hand. That's better than being bottom of the league with games in hand because you'll just take any points you can get. So the beauty for Norwich at this point is just having those points. Doesn't matter about games in hand, like they're on the board. Because as we can see, I mean, who really would have had that pegged a Norwich 3-0 win? That's pretty resounding.
Yeah, it's really interesting though, because the only other time they won games this season were back-to-back wins in the Premier League. They have back-to-back wins in the Premier League again.
And they've got to go for wins because their goal difference is frankly horrible, like minus 32.
Mm.
They've got to go for wins. So in a funny kind of way, Norwich are, they're in a lucky position. They've got clarity. They're like, we need to get wins. Draws won't get us out of this. In a funny kind of way, certainty like that is what might get out of the mess. What didn't help Norwich was that Newcastle got an essential win over Leeds.
Yes.
And I love Leeds. I'm not going to sort of, you know, harangue them too much, but there aren't many times you could say that's legitimately a bad result for Leeds, but this is a bad result for them.
Yeah, Newcastle should have had a penalty as well.
They should have. And they, look, I've got to say, they were good value for it. They were impressive, played on the front foot.
I mean, Leeds had a lot more of the ball, obviously, but I think considering that's what you kind of expect Leeds to do.
Leeds are to possession what Brighton are to XG. There was a point last year, I'd go to FotMob and just look at the stats, and I think Leeds were, I can't remember Leeds not having more possession. There's only one game when I checked FotMob where Leeds had less possession than the opposition. So you expect them to have the ball, but their problem is they generate a lot of heat but not enough light. Yep. There was a miss by Dan James at the far post, and I saw that and I thought,
get a couple, right?
I mean, it's one of those ones where you hit it with the left foot and it's in. And I just think we talk about like Brighton's sort of striking woes or striking challenges, problems, but Leeds are a key one. And the strange thing for me is I just can't see how they're not a team that, I look at a club like Leeds and I think, how are there not a ton of agents on the phone going, we can give you something incredible. We should be throwing, if you're looking at Leeds and the way they play, and you know, Leeds is a town, Leeds is a club, Bielsa is a manager. I can't imagine, I suppose it's a money thing. It must be a money thing because the kind of, Leeds play such good football that we forget that their resources are not actually that ample. And so I have the impression that Leeds, you know, if we talk to Leeds sporting director, they'd probably be like, do you know what? Actually, those names are all on our list. And we're like, Leeds are basically like a kind of, they're one of those like companies, they're like a regional law firm, which has got incredible clients and whatever, but they can't offer you more than like 100K for partnership. And their city law firms are coming in going, yeah, like we know what you're doing is incredible, but we can offer you like 700K. And I really think it might be wages with Leeds, like in terms of the level of quality they can offer, the players they want are all just going elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is though, I think when everyone's available, they're fine. But they've missed so many people this season. Like Calvin Phillips has been out since what? November? No, December, sorry. Patrick Bamford has been out for a while and they are two major components of that side. I think any team in the Premier League would miss Calvin Phillips and any club would miss their first choice number nine. The fact that both haven't, I mean, Bamford's been out, what? He came back for one game, but he's been out since September. So I think with Leeds, it's just about kind of maintaining until they get everyone back. And hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later because they don't want to be dragged into a scrap towards the end of the season when the league levels out and when everyone's played the same games.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of clubs there around the mix. I mean, Everton have to be a bit careful as well.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to Villa.
Everton have to be a little bit careful.
Yeah, I still think Everton will be okay. But I don't know why my gut is saying that, but I just think they will be. It was a good win for Villa against Everton on
really good
Saturday.
Yeah,
Stevie G poking his tongue out at everyone.
He was.
He's so naughty, man. He's very naughty, Stevie G.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
As are a load of fans who were throwing stuff. Naughty, naughty, naughty. There's been a lot of this recently. There was some in this Chelsea game. Arsenal fans recently as well. Spurs fans throwing stuff at. They've thrown a load of light. There's just loads of lighters going at Antonio Rudiger.
No need for that. Yeah, no need.
Yeah. Don't throw stuff at players. It's bad.
Throw your contempt. Don't throw anything like more than contempt. Throw something. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Very, very quickly, Graham Potter was absent through COVID and thus Brighton did not win the HG battle.
I thought you'd see that.
I see everything. Much like the drone that was hovering over Brentford that stopped the game on Saturday. I could not believe this. Who did they figure out? I haven't seen anything about this, but a game was stopped for 20 minutes in the Premier League, because, like Brentford against Wolves, because of a drone hovering over the ground.
I've got a hot take about this. I think it was the same
guy. Bielsa?
Do you remember that? No,
I think it to a new level.
Do you remember? No, he'd be more subtle. He'd be more subtle. I think it's also Bielsa would send a human. He's old school. He'd send a human to spy. He wouldn't send a drone to
over
spy.
The fence with binoculars.
Do you know what I think this drone was? Do you remember that drone at Gatwick that shut down the flights for a bit? I think it's the same drone. I think this drone is actually, I think this drone is trying to feel something. It's trying to feel something. Like, because it's the only explanation I can think of, because the drone at Gatwick, we never ascertained what it was there for. Was it spying? We didn't know. This drone here, like, isn't just, oh, I want to experience lightness and being above something and just, maybe it wasn't even observing. It was just passing through.
It just pops up every now and again, and it's an event when it does. It's like a flying electronic Banksy.
I can relate. To be honest, I can relate to the energy of that drone. I can relate to it. I'm like that. If I was a drone, that's what I'd do.
Yeah, but you'd pop up more frequently than that. You'd pop up far more frequently than that.
Yeah, but
come on. It's been ages since that Gatwick drone. Behave. Can't keep music quiet for that long.
The thing that slightly concerns me about this is that now that people know that a drone will stop a football match,
like a wasp at a barbecue. Just like its presence is enough to kind of ruin everything.
It does, yeah, it does.
Whether it comes after you or not, it's just like as soon as you see one, you're just like, oh,
let's change the energy. Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, the game continued. Wolves won 2-1. Two lovely work goals as well. And Thomas Frank got sent off, which I'm not going to lie, as bad as an example it was, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thoroughly enjoyed how frank Thomas Frank was after the game when he said, you know, the ref booked him, and then I said, you should give me another one or something like that. But apparently it wasn't for that. It was the fact that I turned around and was aggressive towards him. So, you know.
Quite a few little sort of coach bands, player bands at the moment, aren't there?
I'm here for it, to be honest. I think managers getting sent off is... I prefer managers getting sent off than players getting sent off by a mile.
Just because, like, there's no contact and it's just more pantomime, isn't it? It's more pantomime, I suppose.
It's kind of hilarious.
Although...
it's ridiculous. Do you remember that weekend in Serie A where four managers got sent off on one Sunday?
Oh, yes. Like they were competing.
Fucking unbelievable. And then Simeone got sent off for Atleti that night in La Liga. Do you know what? That might be my favourite day of the season so far.
I mean, I'm not a betting man at all, so let's not... But what would the odds have been on that?
I don't know. Ask whoever put all that money on an Arsenal yellow card.
Oh my God. Yeah. Don't get me started. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Right.
We'll talk about Arsenal right his house. Let's talk about Manchester United's last minute winner over West Ham United.
I mean, this was classic. It's funny. I got a message. Shout out to Paul Lansorge, who is a brilliant former podcaster now out in the world doing wonderful things. Paul sent me a DM and he said, oh, you see, like, United win by Marcus Rashford crashing the box, crashing the penalty area. And this is a tough one for Rashford, like the last few games for him. So delighted for him to get this. And the system that Ralf Rangnick is using, I mean, it's not really a 4-2-2-2. It's more like a 4-2-3-1, I feel.
Yeah, this was more of a conventional thing with like Vinicius as a 10.
Yeah, I mean, like, the 4-2-2-2 always makes me a bit anxious, to be honest. Just because it feels so narrow. But this was a really good win for them against, obviously, David Moyes' West Ham. There's a bit of a needle there because of the job that Moyes did at Old Trafford. But, you know, you would have thought both sides had moved on, but I don't think we've moved on quite as much as he has. He's enjoying himself.
No, I think both are fine.
You say that, but I wished a West Ham fan before the game made their best team win on Twitter, and I hastily deleted it because I'm like, if they find this after the game, they're going to come for me.
I thought you said they blocked you.
just a really good win for United, actually, and some really promising signs again. The press is beginning to work, players taking the instruction, and some nice fluidity here and there in amongst some difficult patches of play. So yeah, great win for United. But towards the very top of the league, because that is where things were genuinely, you know, quite spicy, I would say. A cluster of games here. There was the Southampton 1-1 draw against Manchester City.
I thought Southampton were brilliant.
They were, actually. And, you know, took the lead through Walker Peters. Could have been 2-0, actually, disallowed for offside. But just in terms of how they matched up to City, there was a lot of talk before the game. You know, Pep did his famous thing where he said, praises you. And a couple of people on Twitter noticed this. They're like, oh no, Pep's praised us. We're in big trouble. We're going to get thrashing. Didn't pan out that way at all. And this ended up being a good point for City, I think.
Oh, I think it was a great point for City. Southampton unbeaten against City in the league this season, two draws. And also, I think City have only beaten them twice in the last five in the league. That was that big 5-2, and there was another 1-0 win for City. But Southampton, on the whole, last couple of years, haven't done too bad against City.
Mm.
I think, Carl Walker-Peters, his goal was lovely. So lovely. I was watching his post-match interview, and he just comes across as like a really good guy. I don't know him, never met him, but just like, you know, when you get a sense of someone just being like, oh, this is really nice. Like, just, I don't know.
Can I say, it's like, you know, him and Lanty, isn't it funny? Mm. We're in an era of wholesome right backs. Isn't it? There's something very, very wholesome about him. And the Lamptey interview that I saw, it was his first sort of breakout game. And he was just like, he was so friendly and gentle and excitable. And like, yeah, Walker-Peters is in the same kind of ilk. Maybe right back is a wholesome position. I don't know. Maybe it is.
There was a really funny thing at full time where Ralph Hasenhüttl tried to have some kind of like bit of bounce with Pep. Pep was having none of it. Like Ralph turned around, kind of be like, kind of like, whoa. And Pep was just like, no, fuck this, we dropped 2 points. And then went on TV being like, amazing, amazing, amazing. One of the best performances of the season. I was just like, Pep, man.
He gets away with a lot.
I think this is actually a really good game of where, without watching the game, when you look at stats, they can paint a very different picture of what the game felt like watching it. But yeah, good point for Saints. They've steadied a little bit now. We had concerns about them earlier in the season, but I'm glad that they've normalized a little bit.
Isn't it really nice that this comes off the back of the kind of ownership news and all the rest of it? This is a really nice sort of little period for them.
So drop points for City. I don't think it's that bad though. I don't think this all of a sudden massively opens up a title race, because I don't think the title was done, but it doesn't really change a huge amount.
No. Like, I think, you know, where are they dropping? You can see Liverpool going on a bit, you know, having a goal rush in a couple of games, and the goal difference is only, there's only two goal difference between them. But the question is where do City lose twice? But it's not over by any means.
Let's talk about, where do you want to go? Do you want to go
Chelsea Spurs very quickly?
Chelsea Spurs.
Okay, so Chelsea Spurs. Chelsea just came out after the break. So it was 0-0 at halftime. Chelsea just came out and went to overdrive. They really raised the tempo after half. Well, not raised it, but just like they distanced themselves. Hudson-Odoi just went supernova. That was the thing.
Great.
That was the key. Hudson-Odoi just attacking space in the final third. There's very, very few defenders in the world that can cope with that. And there's even fewer that will actually enjoy that. So he was outstanding. He cut in and just drew the coverage. And then Ziyech just picked out this. Oh, my goodness. Ziyech called the top corner. This is like watching Steph Curry from distance. And Ziyech actually, he's a couple of goals, crucial goals now in the last couple of games. Got an important one against Brighton too. And just the curl into the top corner. There's a moment when there are some goals that are worth like an extra half because of like they stamp the authority on the game. And this is very much one of those. They ended up winning 2-0. They got sort of two goals in fairly quick succession and looked comfortable, actually. They looked like they contained. Yeah. This was the Chelsea that we saw at the start of the season, minus the goal scoring form of Lukaku, which is another story. This is the Chelsea we saw at the start of the season and thought, this team is winning the league. Lukaku, again, cutting a slightly awkward figure, I would say.
He was quite isolated, I thought.
Yeah, but isolated, but also like, you can never discern pressure from someone's body language. It's very difficult to discern pressure from someone's body language. But I think expectation is certainly more of a thing than it was when he got there. That injury, I will still say the injury was the bulk of the struggles because when he was
COVID and his injury personal situation,
I think those primary factors, when Lukaku was at the start and locked in, everything was just floating. I mean, was it the 3-0 win over Villa in the league when he scored the third as a kind of exclamation mark? That was the kind of Chelsea were cresting. And Chilwell wasn't injured yet and all the rest of it. But this felt like very much a return to early season form for Chelsea. So that was great for them.
I think Tuchel is starting to realise that, or show a willingness, let's say, to actually use the personnel and adapt game by game with certain personnel for the opposition. as opposed to this is the system, we have to get everyone figuring out how to play it. Because if you look at Chelsea's squad, it's kind of what we were talking about Atleti earlier on, that they have some unbelievable pieces and they're super stacked, but maybe the fit for certain systems isn't really great. And I think what Tuchel has like showed with this kind of slightly weird 4-1-4-1 thing that he played is that actually this really worked for Callum Hudson-Odoi and it really worked for Hakim Ziyech. Maybe where the 3-4-3 hasn't before. I think a 3-4-3 kind of still can work for Callum Hudson-Odoi, but I think in the way that Chelsea play it, it doesn't really. So I think that what Tuchel is doing here, and I wonder whether this is going to be something that we see throughout the rest of the season. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw quite a high turnover of changes game by game for Tuchel, and maybe even systems. Because, for example, if you can bring in Timo Werner and Kai Havertz for a game to almost play as maybe like a two up top and just play a straight 4-4-2 against some opposition, then do it if it works. Yeah. If you want to play Lukaku as a lone forward and just really surround him by passers, you know, you can have a Saul, a Kante, a Kovacic, a Jorginho all around him and play really narrow through the middle and then kind of push the fullbacks really high if you want to. You've got the personnel for that. If it's against a side that is going to sit deeper and you can just really like camp in their half.
And I want to give Kovacic some credit for this, because Kovacic has allowed more flexibility with the way that he's more willing to play on the front foot and play higher up. Well, not play up, but make those runs. You know, playing in this 4-1-4-1, watching him run with the Bunakuzi, he's an unbelievable dribbler, but getting him as close to the goal as possible, I think, is really important because he does break lines. So you have him before, like, receiving the ball from centre-backs and breaking the press. That is an ability. You have that in the final third. That's unbelievable. You look at that, you know, of those four, Hudson-Odoi, Mount is more of a direct runner. He's technically very gifted, but he's more of a direct runner. But certainly Kovacic, Hudson-Odoi, and Ziyech, those are three elite dribblers. Like, they're causing problems high up the pitch.
We haven't even mentioned Christian Pulisic there, and we haven't even, like, you mentioned Mason Mount, but we didn't really even put him in anywhere there. So that's an example of like just how stacked Chelsea are. It gives you so many different ways to play. Chelsea are probably the biggest standalone in terms of having that capability, I think.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, you know? Yeah, without question.
And it's whether Tuchel really leans into that or not. It could be, I personally, as a neutral,
he's definitely leaning into that.
I find that potential really, or that possibility really quite interesting, actually, to see what Chelsea do tactically for the final few months of the season.
They must be a nightmare to coach against in Champions League. They must be an absolute nightmare. This capability makes them so dangerous in that competition.
Definitely. Yeah, let's talk about Palace-Liverpool, because I thought Palace were really hard done by here and actually played really quite well apart from that opening half an hour. Liverpool's second and third, I think, are highly questionable. I think the second one's offside. Firmino is offside. And he deliberately influences play and it should be offside. And I'm not sure how that hasn't been flagged in VAR. Flagged, ironically. No pun intended. What did you think about that?
I mean, to be honest, I'm going to sound like an extremist here, but I thought that Frankie de Jong's goal was a bit weird as well.
Yeah,
and the way that he was like clear, I thought if that's not interfering in terms of the line, because Frankie de Jong receives the square pass, having made that run into the box, and people are going like, "Look, that guy's there." Like, I
think that one's a little bit different because of the quote unquote phase. So
I'm weird with offsides because I'm obviously a bit of an extremist about.
I think the Frankie de Jong one is spiritually offside.
That's right. Thank you.
But it's big, literally onside.
But I'm an extremist, so I would tend to, when things are, yeah, I'm like.
I hear you on that. I think it's like, it's not really in, it's a bit like, oh, that's a bit.
Really?
Mean.
Because someone would have seen Frankie Young making the run and go, oh, he's off. So when the ball comes in, oh, he's off because that. And then you look across and he wasn't given.
Yeah, that's a good point. But by the laws of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Frankie was onside.
Yeah,
laws of the game, I think Firmino was off.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, what I will say is that Liverpool are good value for it. They were good value for the win. And I think, I suppose the penalty in the end just helped it. It's always better when it's more than a single goal margin. Although it was the penalty was iffy.
I don't even know.
What was the keeper supposed to... I saw that and thought to myself, but what are you supposed to do as a keeper? Like, didn't you just run into it?
Just Patrick Vieira said after the game, Diogo Jota has been clever there. And I actually went, no, he hasn't.
He just ran into him.
I actually don't think Diogo Jota has been clever at all because I think it's so blatant. If it wasn't so blatant, then it might have been clever. But I think it was so blatant that it actually really wasn't that clever.
This did not look like a penalty. I have to say.
It was never a penalty. It was never, ever a penalty, ever. Yeah,
this is not good.
I think we've said this quite a lot of times on the podcast recently, that the technology is there and it's just being used in such a weird way.
Yeah, but this is the history of humans and technology, isn't it? Good technology, bad humans. Get bad application, or like, you know, the application is just not the best. But yeah, that was, I'm not a Palace fan. If I was, I'd be extremely sore about that outcome. I thought the penalty award was worse than the offside, actually, to be honest.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think the offside is, I think it should have been caught because, the technology is there. Right. Whether he touches it or not, he still influenced the play.
Yeah.
Also, though, Palace had chances. Palace had some big chances. Really, as harsh as those decisions were on Palace, if you're going to be hypercritical, they shouldn't have mattered.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Also, as we know, if one of those goals goes in, the whole pattern of play changes for the rest of the game. You might not even get that penalty shout. So I don't know. It's one of those. I think that's a good loss.
Yeah, a good loss. How they're playing, their direction of travel, like, it's clear what Vieira wants them to do. I don't know. They just had I'd like to have watched more of their games this season, because whenever I pay attention to them, I'm really impressed by what they're doing over there. Really impressed.
Yeah. Before we go to Serie A, and we'll wrap on Serie A, let's just give a quick shout out to, the Zweite Bundesliga. HSV won the Hamburg Derby on Friday night. It was a big, big result.
Yeah, it's big for them. Because Pauli were kind of winning that power struggle, actually.
Yep. Darmstadt's 2-0 win over Ingolstadt meant that Darmstadt went above St. Pauli to top the table. The top nine of that league in an 18-team league. So that's half the league, Musa.
Half the league. What are they separated by?
9 points. So, having all played exactly the same amount of fixtures. Now that, everybody, is what I call a league.
That's so chaotic. That is so...
Beste Liga der Welt.
Was für ein Liga. Yeah.
In the Bundesliga, wins for Bayern and Dortmund meant that it's as you were at the top of the table. And Leverkusen being Augsburg meant they're third. Union beat Gladbach. Gladbach are on an atrocious run of form.
That is horrible for them.
I'm really quite worried about them.
Well, yeah.
I don't think they're going to get dragged into it, but they're only 4 points off an automatic relegation spot.
That is terrible given what they have in their squad. That's really, really bad.
It is quite bad.
The Adi Hütter fit just doesn't look like the right one. It's so weird though, because they're getting these huge wins. They're brilliant against, they're legitimately brilliant against Bayern. Legitimately brilliant.
The only club in the world where the fans sing, "Can we play you every week?" at Bayern Munich.
And legitimately so, but they've been such a strange... The concern for Gladbach is that individual players seem to be going backwards in their development there. That's a concern. But it is easy to forget in all of this, just what an incredible club. We've talked about Urs Fischer before, but it is incredible that Union Berlin are fourth in the Bundesliga, because they do not have the resources. If I looked the other day at their resources and their income, and if it was just on income, they should be like halfway up the Zweite Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. If Union Berlin qualify for the Champions League,
wild.
My head might fall off. And it's possible. It's absolutely possible. Although RB Leipzig would make a really interesting run at things.
I'm looking at that top four and I'm kind of like,
I can see
Union and Freiburg. Union and Freiburg going to be in that at the end of the season? I don't think they are. But I want them to be. I really genuinely want. I would.
The question is, will Leverkusen catfish us again?
I mean,
they're looking different this year. They're not looking catfishy. I've just invoked it.
Do you know who's in trouble? Big time. Wolfsburg.
Oh my. They're not generating anything.
They are taking a strangely similar trajectory to what Werder Bremen did last season, also under Florian Kohfeldt.
Right. Oh, God. They really could go down. Because
they really could, man.
Here's the thing as well. I don't back them in a playoff. I don't back them because they don't have firepower. They don't have any firepower. And the thing about them as well is they could get stripped for parts. Baku gets shipped out, like, because he's an asset you can flip. Like, there's a couple of players that could leave that configuration, and they're in trouble, actually.
Mm. Let's quickly go to Serie A. Let's wrap.
Let's do it.
Mainly in Serie A, I want to talk about Tammy, because Tammy's on a bit of a run. I think it's since like the beginning of November, only Robert Lewandowski has scored more goals in top five European league.
Whoa, he's exploded then. That's wild. That's a lot.
What was it? Hang on. Let me find the tweet. I should get this right. Here we go. From Opta. Since the start of November 2021, only Robert Lewandowski has scored more non-penalty goals across all competitions than Tammy Abraham among players in the big five European leagues. So Robert Lewandowski has scored 14 non-penalty goals in all competitions since November 2021. Tammy Abraham has scored 13.
That is... Do you know, this is incredible for him. I'm so happy for him because this is a really bold move. And funny to see Maitland-Niles playing as a number 10. Behind him. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, obviously, he's received all the conversation. Obviously, there's a WhatsApp group of which Maitland-Niles is part, and it's like, should I dip my toe in the water? And Tammy Abraham's obviously like, you come here and run your guts out for Roma, they'll love you. And we've said this before about Roma being a great destination for so many players and having a mm-hmm. tough time creatively. And for Tammy to do this, like to beat, there is not a point in the last 50 years where it has not been incredibly cool to be a starting number nine for Serie A team. Yeah, like it's one of the coolest jobs in football, and it has been for the last 50 years. And for Tammy to be doing that and playing that with such aplomb. And just like the thing I love about his game is it's not just like the goals, it's the link-up play. Mm. Like Tammy Abraham at his peak is a full service number nine. Like he is the real
problem,
deal.
Man. In the words of Draymond Green, he's already a problem.
Great footwork from a distance. He can shoot from distance. He has fantastic footwork. He crashes the box. He actually hits the 6-yard box, unlike a lot of strikers. He can link up. He can do all of that. Like, and it's mm-hmm. to see him do this, it's such a great validation of the guts it took to move there. Because players leave Chelsea and they can, not to name names, but we've seen players leave Chelsea and they've plummeted down the leagues. They're not the Robert Green at other clubs, but he's gone there and utterly embraced it. And he's done it in a Roma side, frankly, that aren't that, they're good, but they're not that consistent. This Roma team, and this is a tough team. They've had some of the most humiliating losses for a Roma team mm-hmm. in recent seasons. And he's been at the heart of that. And part of me thinks, what does Tammy Abraham do in a team where everything's firing? You know, because this would have grabbed the attention certainly of other clubs in the league, right? Like mm-hmm. clubs like Inter, clubs like, I mean, see Napoli have got their own nine. Inter, but
you know what, with Tammy at Inter,
it's not a bad shout because Dzeko is not a long-term solution to that. He's mm-hmm. brilliant. He's brilliant, Dzeko, but he's not a long-term solution.
I want Tammy to stay.
Yeah, me too. Also, what I must say as well, my respect as well to Roma because I want them to like maximize what they're doing. I want him to be the figurehead of that team. I just think, I suppose I'm just saying that like he would have attracted attention of a lot of competitors too.
Yeah.
Because the transition, the speed of the transition to Serie A, it's not easy to move to that league and do.
Yeah, I think also though, Tammy strikes me as the kind of guy who won't forget what that move has done for him, and I think will remain. I think he looks like he, I mean, we saw it in his first game he's doing this, you know, doing the hand, the Italian
yeah, exactly.
gestures, and he's just like, this is a guy who is enjoying being in Rome, and I hope it continues. Should we bounce?
Let's do it.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, getting vaccinated if you can, obviously, getting that boost if you can. Don't forget to check Wright's House on Wednesday and Stadio back on Thursday. Stadio Outros play us on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on an absolute classic from Dabry, Magic Says. 18 years old this is, still sounds like the future. Anything you want to add, Musa Kwanga?
Nothing further. All good, all present and correct.
What are you up to hiding?
I'm up to nothing.
What are
nothing,
you?
Nothing.
Looking,
nothing.
What's he doing?
Nothing. Doing? Nothing.
If only you could all see what I could see right now. What is this mischievous grin? What have you
happy.
Done?
Nothing. I'm just happy. I'm just happy, Ryan. I'm just happy.
Is it because we're finished?
Just good vibes. Just as me, natural good vibes.
All right then. All right. Much love, everyone. We'll be back on Thursday.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.